This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Welcome in. Let's go. Long Shots U.S. Open edition. Back in studio where we belong every week, Wes Reynolds. No Matt Brown. So I went the Matt Brown route and really spread out today. I was like, I'll just bring both computers. This is what it takes, though. You have multiple computers, multiple screens to get through a whole golf week, right, Wes?
Yeah, no stone unturned, no village unpillaged. This is the U.S. Open, baby.
That's right, exactly.
This is a traditional U.S. Open. This is Oakmont. This is carnage. That's why I love the U.S. Open.
I love it.
Couple reasons. Number one, because of the carnage, because par is a good score, as it should be in a U.S. Open. You shouldn't shoot 15 under to win the U.S. Open. Not only that, but it's also the most democratic, as Kevin Costner says, in 10 Cups. So you have the best in the world, Scottie Scheffler, and then you have a dentist from McCordsville, Indiana, nearby where I grew up, Matthew Vogt, that qualified for this. So you get random qualifiers. Players from all over the world. Great field this week.
It is awesome. I know everybody likes to power rank their favorite majors. I don't want to go down that road, Wes, because you know what? I think all of them are special in their own right. Mm-hmm. Although PGA probably is the worst. But I don't want to go down that road because all of them are special. But you're right. It's fun when we get a really tough U.S. Open test. We're going to get into everything here today on the show. As usual, we will run through the odds board, the course, what we're looking at, Wes's great course breakdown, which you can always find over at VSiN.com. Head there for our bets as well. Myself, Wes, Matt Browns, Matt Humans, everybody who bets golf at the network will be up there for the week. So we'll hit that all here today. We're going to go over next segment. We'll lock into the stats that we really looked at as we're breaking down Oakmont. And it's, guess what? It's tough. It's going to be real tough. So I'm interested to see what our models looked like this week, Wes, and what we shared and what we differed on a little bit. And then third segment, we got Rex Hager from the Golf Channel joining us. Boots on the ground to be able to talk to Rex about what the weather's looked like the past couple days, if we're expecting that to bleed into the tournament at all, if it's maybe changed some of the rough length greens or anything like that. So always great catching up with Rex Hager.
Insight from the players and all their pissing and moaning about the rough and how tough it's going to be. And now the greens are like putting on glass. So I'm eager to hear that.
Me too. Rex always bringing great insight. And then final segment, Wes and I will run through all of our bets. So Wes, I want to start right at the top of the odds board, because I thought this was pretty fascinating this week with what we're getting odds for the U.S. Open and where they kind of shifted to slightly from what we've seen the past couple weeks when these have been posted around the country. Scottie Scheffler plus 275, Bryson DeChambeau plus 750, John Rahm 12-1, Rory McIlroy 12-1, then it's Xander 22-1, everybody else 25-1 or longer. We're going to get into a lot of guys that we ended up betting. I want to discuss these guys at the top and how do we attack betting these guys and what your level of interest is in them this week. Scottie Scheffler, full field event plus 275. Quick thoughts on that one. How you feel, Wes?
Yeah, and I even see as low as plus 260, I believe, at Bet365, at Caesars, a couple other different books, basically ballpark 275. We're not quite to odds on yet for him to win a major. That's why I'm very reluctant to put him in Tiger territory, because we used to get that routinely where he was odds on, where he's minus money even before the tournament started. But this guy's best player in the world right now. There's no course. It's like, is this not a good course for him? Every course is a good course for him. It's just, you know, can he make the putts? And we'll be talking about that throughout the program. These greens, 14.5 to 15 on the stimp. These are the fastest greens they will see. Maybe that's the great equalizer. But in terms of Scotty, did not bet the outright. Don't blame me if you do, but not sure how I'm going to really attack him, or if I'm just going to be neutral. And that's probably what I'm going to be, is neutral on him, where I'm not certainly wanting to get in front of him in terms of like matchups or anything like that. But it might be one where I have to let the favorite beat me. And look, he's done a pretty good job over the last month. I had the same philosophy at the PGA. How'd that work out? Not too well. But Scottie Scheffler, the rightful favorite here, going for his first U.S. Open and his fourth major champion.
And you were on Bryson, PGA, and Rory for the Masters, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we have hit. We've hit one, and we've hit a second in one in the majors so far. So we'll let's hope get back in the winner's circle. So, Scottie, look, this is the way I really thought I'd be in on Scheffler or Bryson. These odds, though, are I know they're short on Scotty. These are pretty fair odds to me, Wes, and I really don't know. I've been struggling with this for the past 48 hours, how to get involved. I am going to, I think, pre-tournament, we are talking to you on Tuesday afternoon out here in Las Vegas. Might pull the trigger on something beforehand, but otherwise I do think that those two, along with that next name, John Rahm, are going to be live looks throughout the tournament for me, and I'm going to have a little bit lighter outright card, as you're going to see later in the show. I was really planning on betting John Rahm this week. I thought his odds were going to be a little closer to what we saw at the PGA when they were like 17, 18 to 1. And I thought there was going to be some love for him, but I thought it was going to be more like 15, 16. We were talking about it a little bit before we started the show. That's just not there. So I think those three names, as far as the outright market, I'm going to be playing live. Real quick to you, because I want to get to the course here. Rory McIlroy, what do you do with him this week?
Yeah, I don't know what to do with him. He did miss a cut. Look, it's not about missing a cut necessarily. He missed it badly.
Yeah.
At a course at TPC Toronto for the RBC Canadian Open, which seemed to be tailor-made for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, long, you know, not a lot of dangerous rough, can hit driver pretty much everywhere and clear the bunkers and have short wedges into the green, and did not play well. And maybe he's just in that post-Masters, you know, that post Grand Slam, where it took him a decade to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally did it, so he's breathing a little bit. And then it came out that, oh, is his driver legal at the PGA? Because it got tested. The USGA randomly tests those clubs. And, you know, so he didn't want to talk to the media. And you know, Rory just doesn't seem... It wasn't like the Masters when we bet him, where it's like, he seems like he's in a really good frame of mind.
Oh, he's coming in great form.
The form is great. He seems positive. Like, there was everything to like about him, even though he got off to that slow start, but was much the best player on the weekend. Still had to be Rory McIlroy with the drama and make it into a playoff, but nothing for me. He is getting faded a little bit in the matchup market, though, and that's why you're seeing a little drift.
Yeah, I understand. Look, these past couple outings have not been ideal. Not what you want to see, especially out of the approach numbers with Rory McIlroy. I think those are concerning. Rest of the board we'll get to, but I know there's a lot of interest in those big four names at the top. I really do think they chew up a lot of the win equity in this tournament. It sounds kind of boring, but it's not boring if you're winning, guys. The three majors we've talked about so far, Wes, it's been, man, you got to look at the top of the board, and I don't know how many guys much further down really have a chance at winning, especially when we go to a course as tough as Oakmont, right? Want to transition to that now. Wes Reynolds, every single week over at VSiN.com, does great course write-ups. We talk about them here in Long Shots on the podcast. You can check it out now, YouTube, VSiN YouTube. Go over wherever you get your podcast if you want it in audio form. But Wes, walk us through a little bit of this monster course that we're going to see this week.
Yeah, 10th time that Oakmont has hosted. First time since 2016 when Dustin Johnson was the winner. Gil Hance, who's been doing a lot of these renovations, just did a renovation here a couple years ago, expanded the green, expanded the bunkers, cut down a lot of the trees. This is not as tree lined as you might have seen Oakmont 10 years ago, or when Angel Cabrera won it back in 2007.
Got rid of basically all of them.
Yes, they did. Lengthened the course, 73-72. It is a par 70. It's not a long course by modern standards, but there's a lot of difficulty here, especially you've got narrow fairways in terms of 28 yards on average.
Yeah.
These are pretty narrow fairways, and you could see some of the B-roll courtesy of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They did a hole-by-hole flyover, which I link into my piece at VSiN.com. 5-inch thick rough, so we're back to the U.S. Open rough that we didn't necessarily have last year at Pinehurst number 2. No water, but there's 168 bunkers on this course, and they're not the traditional ones either.
Most on the tour.
Yeah, you see right there, if you're watching on video, those are the church pews, where they have those little grass mounds inside the bunkers. And if you basically hit it into a bunker, it's almost essentially a one-shot penalty. And you've got to, you know, go back out because you might hit the lip of these bunkers and then have to try to hit it out again. So you're getting a lot of these weird bunkers. You get a lot of awkward lies in these things. So got to stay out of them. You actually have ditches that crisscross the property, but they're not as playable now because you've got about a foot to a foot and a half high native grasses. If you look at some of the flyover holes when we do our video, you can see cars going by because the Pennsylvania Turnpike runs through Oakmont, which is about a little bit, maybe a 20-minute drive northeast of Pittsburgh. massive greens here, 8,500 square feet on average. They're going to be fast, about 15 on the weekend for the stint meter. So you're going to get penalized for bad shots here. And the greens, I think, are the number one defense. And we'll talk about that with Rex Hoggard, because everybody talks about the rough, but we never really talk about the greens. These things are slick.
Yep.
And you're going to be staring at three putts and a lot of these things, and you got to take that into account when you make the approaches here. Average score, by the way, here for the past two U.S. Opens, 4.63 strokes over par, highest of any U.S. Open course this century.
That is, listen to what Wes Reynolds just said. What is the Westgate number? We're looking at 1.5, basically, over under par, over under 1.5 under par, basically, for what the winning score will be. That's what they've set it at. So this is what you're looking at when it comes to Oakmont and U.S. Open and what scores we are expecting. I am glad you brought up the greens, Wes, because we've talked often on this podcast, if really tough greens, does that kind of balance out the weak putters and the good putters? And I tend to say yes, but do you think that changes in a major at all?
It could, but I think more often than not, fast greens are a little bit more of a balance than slow greens are.
Right,
I think, favor a lot of the international and the European players. We've certainly seen that in the Ryder Cup in European venues. But I was just watching various videos, and we'll get an insight from Rex Hoggard later on in the show. But Bryson DeChambeau on his YouTube page, actually, I believe, played a practice round. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but I linked to that in the column. He has about a 50-minute video, and just watching him putt on these greens, and Bryson's a very good putter on fast greens. And these balls just rolling by 4 and 5 feet, man.
Yeah.
And this was 2 weeks ago. They're even going to be slicker this week, so should be a lot of fun. Maybe not fun for the players, but a lot of fun for us.
That's right. More on the course and the stats that mattered that we plugged into our models on the other side.
This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Yeah, baby. Long Shots, U.S. Open week. Let's go. Big week here for the network for golf bettors. We love this tournament. We love this golf course. Wes, we hit on it a little bit before we went to break. We'll go over kind of our stats that we think matter the most here. If you are doing your own handicapping at home, Wes, Matt, and I, we all do a lot of stat modeling for each and every PGA Tour event that we go to bet. So something that we lean on pretty heavily, as Wes mentioned earlier, Oakmont. We've seen 10 U.S. Opens played there already, so we have seen this course a fair amount over our lifetimes. Want to start with the weather. I know you wanted to update that real quick. We've seen, some wet conditions early in the week?
And I think more toward the weekend is what we're going to get. Hot first couple days, high 80s there in eastern Pennsylvania. Very little wind. I don't think there's going to be a lot of wind. That's not going to be much of a factor. But Saturday, I think about a 75% chance you're going to get a thunderstorm at some point in the afternoon. So there could be some weather delays. Periods of rain also on Sunday. It does cool down on the weekends to the very low 70s for a high. So going to be firm and fast, like a U.S. Open is always going to be, and they've had a wet spring there in the Pittsburgh area here in Oakmont, Pennsylvania, so you're going to get it still be firm, and these greens, by the way, they have that sub-air system, so these are not going to be soft greens. These are going to maintain their speed, I think, throughout the weekend. Maybe they're a little slower to start the tournament, but slow being 14 on the stint meter, which is lightning fast. So these are going to be very fast greens, and that's something I think is absolutely going to play a factor here. And just looking in terms of the scorecard, maybe some unique holes. There are a couple risk reward drivable par fours. At the number two is 346. Number 17 is 312, right when you're going home for your round. And then the par 3 eighth, 289. Remember, it played 300 back in 2016. It was the longest par 3 ever in U.S. Open history. A couple long par 5s, actually only two of them, and they're both over 600 yards. So not guaranteed, based on the narrowness of the fairways and the thickness of the rough, that these are necessarily two-shot holes to get to the green.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see many of that at all. Actually,
maybe the Brysons and the Rorys and the Neimans, the real long guys off the tee, can reach, but you're not going to see many reach.
All right, so let's dig into the stats that we ended up plugging into our models, what we think is going to matter the most, and I want to start right there, right off the tee, okay? This is, I think there's going to be a lot of questions if you're listening to golf podcasts this week or listen to other people talk golf betting. I think the big question this week is, what do you care more about, distance off the tee or accuracy off the tee? Wes broke it down earlier. We're dealing with 28-yard wide fairways. That is very, very slim with five plus inches worth of rough over there. So we're going to start at 5 inches. Who knows where we end the weekend?
Yeah, because it doesn't look like there's like that intermediate cut
shortcut.
It's okay. You hit it there. You hit it in the stuff.
Yep.
And you got to deal with it accordingly.
So I said this on a numbers game. It's real easy. I just need someone that can hit it really far and hit it really straight. That's really what you're looking for this week. I do think both are valuable, Wes. I don't know if you leaned one way or the other.
So total driving, if you want to do a little combo play.
Yeah, so I don't know if you lean stronger one way or the other. I would say that distance does matter a little bit more than me, but once we get to my betting card, you are going to see that it's a mix. There are some guys that are some bombers, then I got some guys that are really accurate off the tee, but I did go with one or the other.
And while I realize that it's not a huge sample size, being that there's been two U.S. Opens played here at Oakmont, 07 and 16 in the last, quarter century, Angel Cabrera, when he won this thing, who, by the way, has resurged on the Champions Tour this summer, second in the field for driving distance when he won at Oakmont in 2017. Dustin Johnson, number one in driving distance. So I was a little bit more of a, I don't want to say a bias, but a little bit more of a lean toward distance. I think you do have to incorporate a little bit of accuracy, though, as well.
Yeah, I mean, and look, we talk about this a lot with the guys that we are focusing on. Wes. It's
okay.
Not on air yet.
I don't want to spoil it. Sorry.
Yeah, don't spoil it. I know it's funny. I do think if you are looking with the length of the course overall, right, there are guys like I'll throw out a name, an Aaron Rye, right, who is accurate off the tee in a proficient long iron player that if you wanted to go with some, call Morikawa, right? Probably another good example.
Yes.
You wanted to go with something like that, I think that's a route you can go, but you need distance somewhere when it comes to the ball striking, in my opinion. So I did, as far as off the tee, a small look at strokes gained off the tee just in general, then did plug in driving distance and driving accuracy and kind of did a full blend of that. And then we get into approach stats. Heavy strokes gained approach for me. And then I just went basic greens and regulations, since we are dealing with some larger greens this week that we know these guys are going to be forced to hit into certain positions. I usually like to look at opportunities gain. If it's a course I think these guys can go out and score on and really put these iron shots close to the pin. I don't know that we're going to be able to get that this week at Oakmont. So that's what I went with for approach stats, Wes. And then I just went basic par four scoring. This is a lot of par fours. We're on a par 70 golf course. You're going to be able to have to just eke out par. I'm not going to say go out there and birdie these, but you need to be parring these par fours pretty regularly. So I did that, and then it is a lot of save your ass stats. Sand saves, around the green, scrambling more important than those first two, in my opinion. Overall bogey avoidance I plugged in pretty heavily, and then as far as putting, a little bit of just strokes gained putting in general, but then three putt avoidance, lag putting stats with how big the greens are this week. I think that's extremely important. So that was basically my entire model, everything that I really plugged in this week.
Save your ass stats. I like that, and I think it very much applies here this week. Bogey avoidance, strokes gained putting on fast greens. If you want to go with POA, you can, but what I've often said on long shots, POA is different on the West Coast than it is on the East Coast. It's a little smoother on the East Coast, whereas the West Coast, you go to like Torrey, you go to Pebble Beach, you get a lot of those bumps, especially playing in February in the late wintertime. So strokes gained around the green, scrambling percentage I also used. I used approach because it's not even the normal approach. It's kind of like your spin control.
And if you're watching at home, this is the rough they are looking at.
Oh,
it is Ben Griffin dropping one in. He can't even find it.
He's been playing about as well as anybody in the world, not named Scottie Scheffler. But For what you mentioned about greens and regulation, I do want to go to that really quickly. Because when you look at that, it's like, oh my God, these are 8,500 square feet on average greens. Like, these are going to be, they're going to go 18 of 18 in GIR. Not necessarily, because if you hit a certain part, hitting the green and sticking on the green are two different things.
Yep.
And if you notice, and I have a video that I put up in my article at VSiN.com from the USGA, when they kind of do the flyover and they go to the greens and you're seeing the arrows go, you know, right off the green. So, you know, a lot of these balls are not going to hold. So don't be fooled by the fact that these are 8,500 square feet greens and that they're massive. A lot of these are not going to hold. And, you know, you could reach all these greens and not make any birdies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it is with the speed of the greens. But I think in terms of the save your ass stats that you mentioned, I think those are going to be even just as crucial, if not more so, than your pure ball striking here.
Yep. I will say we're going to go over all of our bets here in about 15, 20 minutes, guys. I want to just say, Wes, as far as your models and numbers rated out, I'll tell you, I don't think that number's completely unfair on Scottie Scheffler, because I have not seen this big of a divide in where I have Scheffler ranked at number one and who is down to number two, number three in a very, very long time, if ever. So it is Scottie Scheffler way up high. I am hoping I can get in on him live, but we'll see on that. Other names that stuck out to you, though, I was a little surprised. I'm not surprised that Ben Griffin ended up in my top 10 with how well he has been playing recently. A little bit surprised Patrick Cantlay's still hanging around mm-hmm. that range. No spoiler here. I did nothing with him this week. But anybody else that surprised you that was kind of in your top 10?
A little bit, because with this, we are limited, as we've talked about on this program, with live data.
Yeah.
We do not have great data, so we have to go a little bit sort of a guessing game. There's some great people out there that are able to have a facsimile of the data, but Mark Leishman kind of profiled high for me. He's been playing solid on LIV, but not setting the world on fire. I'm not surprised that I had the usual suspects, Scotty, DeChambeau, Joaquin Niemann, who he's won about as much as anybody, won again last weekend at LIV at Robert Trent Jones in Virginia. So they profiled very high. So I wasn't, not a lot of shockers, I guess, this week, but just, you see Scheffler like pop everywhere, whether it's approach, which he always does,
scrambling.
But it's like scrambling number one. And I just around the green and all these different things, even if he's not peak, he's still right there.
All right, before we get to break, we got Rex Hager coming up next. I want to talk about the big-name golfer that you have absolutely no interest in betting, Wes Reynolds, because I've got one this week.
Well, you do, and that's what the spoiler was, so I'll let you get to that. But, man... I'd probably say Rory.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from him.
I would probably say Rory, and it's not that I want to fade him. I don't want to fade him, but I don't know if I want to back him. But he obviously is coming back for some redemption after he gave it away last year at Pinehurst.
That's right. I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson, though, as my number one guy that I have no interest in betting.
There's what I was chuckling at, folks.
He's living the life. I don't know if you heard his press conference yesterday, but he seems pretty tapped out on golf, and I can understand why.
I'd be distracted, too.
He's enjoying
his family and his wife, and not living the player he was the last time he was at
Oakmont. That's right. Rex Hager from the Golf Channel coming when we come back.
This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
All right, welcome back to Long Shots. Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds with you. Matt Brown with the day off. We might hear from him a little bit tomorrow. Excited to welcome in our very first guest, and our first guest in a long time on Long Shots, the great Rex Hager from Golf Channel, who is out there, boots on the ground, on location. Love talking golf with Rex. Rex, thanks for joining us today, bud. Appreciate it.
Of course. I will tell you, there's soggy boots right now here at Oakmont.
Soggy boots right now. Okay, there we go. That's a good place to start. You know what? Speaking of boots, though, I got to ask you something I've been wondering for a long time. As we've done more of the walk and talks on the course with the players, and I know you've been a part of them as well, we always worry about the players and how they feel about it. How do you feel about it as the on-course reporter? Because walking and talking, for me at least, is not easy to do at the same time.
I have a little bit different opinion probably than most people. I find them very difficult only because it's new. And as a rule in golf, we haven't talked to players while they're in the field of play. Like, you spend plenty of time talking to them before and after rounds and on practice rounds. And I will say it was at the Memorial just 2 weeks ago where I did a walk and talk, and Jack Nicklaus, the host, the great legend of the game, he was outspoken about not liking the walk and talk. I just happened to be the wrong one doing the walk and talk at that point. I agreed 100% with what Mr. Nicklaus said. I also agreed, I think the line that he used, what would Ben Hogan do if I walked up to him with a microphone? And he answered his own question. He said Ben Hogan would punch me in the face. I also agree with that. I think Ben Hogan would have punched me in the face. Now, all of that said, since we started these in the fall at the RSM Classic. And since we've done that, I have found that the players are more open to them. They're more engaging with them. And I think they've gotten better. And I'm not necessarily saying the questions have gotten better, but I think the players have come around to it. And it does add something to the telecast.
Now, this week, Rex is obviously a different bird, being a major championship on a really what looks like a difficult golf course, certainly has been in the past. So when you're walking and talking or sitting and talking with players throughout the week, what are they complaining about more, the rough or the 15 on the stint meter greens that they're seeing this week?
Yes. I mean, that's the easiest way of saying it. Just yes. They're going to complain about the rough. They're going to complain about the green speeds. They're going to complain about how undulating the greens are. And I did find it interesting that Rory McIlroy just spoke with the media, and he talked about the idea that the player who is going to win this week is going to have the best attitude. And I don't think you can overestimate how important that is, specifically at this test, more so than anywhere else certainly we played this year on the PGA Tour. Maybe a few years, this is going to be the toughest driving test that these players have faced. If you miss the fairway, you're not going to have much of a chance, if at all, to reach the green. And I will go back to 2016. When Dustin Johnson, of course, won here, he led the field. He got up and down 73% of the time. We always think of Dustin as this power player with this wonderful wedge game who finally broke through after all that work with Butch Harmon, and that's true. But this victory here was all about his short game, and I think it's going to be a very similar test this week. The players are able to just wrap their minds around the idea that you're going to end up in a really bad position somewhere along the line during every round that you play here, and you just need to make the most of it. Those are the guys who are going to have success.
Rex, I think one of the big talking points, especially with the gamblers this week, is what do we think is going to matter more off the tee, the distance or the accuracy with how thick that rough is? What is your opinion on that, and who do you think has the advantage, the bombers or the more accurate guys this week?
This is so counterintuitive to what we all know about the modern game, and it's all about distance, and we certainly see it on the PGA Tour. It's longer, it's faster, clubhead speeds, it's all of those things that we talk about. This is going to be the outlier, in my opinion.
Okay.
Bryson DeChambeau was just talking about the idea this is not 2020 Wingfoot. And, of course, he won there hitting a lot of drivers. You're not going to be able to advance it onto these greens like he was able to at Wingfoot. Keep in mind, that U.S. Open was played in September. The rough wasn't nearly as penal as what we have here. The green speeds weren't nearly as fast. I was talking with Randy Smith about this yesterday. He's a swing coach with Scottie Scheffler, the world number one. And my take was, how many drivers do you think Scottie is going to hit? And Randy gave me one of his signature sort of shrugs, like, I don't know. He goes, look, you can hit driver, and you can get as close to the green as possible, and you're going to miss a lot of fairways, or you can hit 4-iron and another 4-iron. And I go, that sounds exhausting. And he goes, yes, but it's going to be easier than try to hit out of this rough. So I think it's going to be more important to at least somehow try to find the short grass.
Rex, looking at the odds board, the obvious favorite, Scottie Scheffler, plus 275. Nobody in the world is playing better than he is right now. But I do want to ask you about one player that you mentioned just a moment ago, and that's Rory McIlroy. You talked about, hey, you got to have the best attitude this week. What is his attitude, though, right now? Because this has been up and down. He finally clears the hurdle and wins the career Grand Slam at the Masters, but been a little bit in a post-master slump, and then the reports about the driver and how it tested at the PGA. So what is your outlook on him this week? It seems like he's a little cool on the odds board. He has drifted up to like 14-1 when him and Scottie were like right neck and neck for the Masters in the early signature events this season.
And I think that's fair. I think the folks that do those odds boards know a lot more about this stuff than I do. But when you look at what Rory has done really in the last 8 weeks since winning at the Masters, all those things that you just pointed out, winning the career Grand Slam. We were having conversations in that moment of just imagine what he can do now. Imagine the run he can go on now that he's unburdened by trying to win the career Grand Slam and trying to win the green jacket. Now here we are 8 weeks later and we're trying to figure out, would you even put him in your top five? I'm not 100% sure that I would bet against him to miss the cut at this point based on how he played last week. And we can talk about the driver, and that is certainly an issue in him losing his driver because it was deemed non-conforming. Happens a lot on the PGA Tour. At the PGA Championship, that certainly impacted him, and we know how important that is to him. I think this is a larger question, and as only Rory can, he sort of addressed it better than anyone else today when he spoke with the media, and he said, look, you always dream about what it's going to feel like on Sunday when you accomplish that thing. In this particular case, it was Augusta and the career Grand Slam. You never think about what comes next. I think right now he's wrestling with what comes next.
Yeah, I think it's a great answer. I think it's what we're probably seeing out of him. And I think the odds drift is fair, and I can't blame anybody who wants to bet Rory at 14-15-1, Wes, with how we looked at the beginning of the year. But man, it does look like there are some struggles out there right now. Rex, I want to ask you, assuming you agree with me that Scottie Scheffler is the man to beat this week, who do you think is going to give him the best run for his money?
God, I don't even know who I could possibly even pick beyond Scottie Scheffler as the betting favorite. But I do think there's players to watch. Certainly, I think Xander Schauffele has shown a better set of form, really, than what he started the season with. We all know about the rib injury that he dealt with during the offseason. He would be one I would really keep an eye on. And the other player, and this is probably a bit of an outside thought here, but it's Shane Lowry. If you go back to 2016, the last time the Open was played here, he'd been a tied for fourth, and he was right in the mix until the very end. He's driving the ball so well now. I was talking with a colleague of mine from Ireland this morning. Yeah, probably more importantly, he's putting the ball well right now. So I really like Shane.
Rex, we know that Scottie Scheffler obviously has been in winning form and Ben Griffin in terms of the short term, but another guy that's been in real winning form, and you might not be seeing him if you're not watching live, but that's Joaquin Niemann. 4 event wins and 8, including last weekend at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Virginia. But he's never really quite been there in a major. Certainly was better at the PGA, ended up T8, so he was kind of in the mix there. Is there finally a belief in Joaquin Niemann, or is everybody kind of like, okay, show me finally in a major with this guy? Because he's at about 30-1 on the board. He is certainly getting a little bit of support from some of the bettors.
I'm going to give this the worst possible analysis because I am in the show me camp when it comes to Joaquin. And I've been really quick, and I've said this for quite a while. He is the only player who I felt like went to LIV Golf and got better. And I'm not just talking about at LIV Golf, winning 4 times on that tour. Winning 4 times on any tour is big, and it's important, and it's an impressive feat. I don't care what tour in the world you're playing on. He's an impressive player, and I think he only continues to get better. But as you pointed out, his record in the majors just isn't very good. And I'm under the cliche mindset when it comes to things like that, that you are what your record says you are. And right now, he's a player that's trying to figure out how to compete in majors.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm still on the wait and see approach when it comes to that as well. Was in on a lot of Niemann early in the career on the PGA Tour, and now I'm kind of pumping the brakes a little bit. Rex Hoggard, ladies and gentlemen, Rex, now you've been doing great work, not only for the Golf Channel but doing several hits on VSiN. We appreciate it, all my friend. All the best of luck to you this week.
Appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Rex.
All right, Wes. Well, that was some insightful stuff from Rex, as always. Always good to have boots on the ground. A little wet right now, as
yeah,
he said.
Yeah, he says they're complaining about everything. That's what golfers do, right? The greens are so fast, man. The rough. It's the U.S. Open, though. That's what it's supposed to be. I don't like, you know, when it goes to somewhere off the beaten path. It's like, oh, cool, new venue. Like when they went to Erin Hills all those years ago, and it's like, this is the longest course ever, and there are like 12 people that were 10 under par or better. So this is what it should be. It should be a grind, and that's exactly what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, honestly, speaking to that point of the, I think we've had more courses that have failed to live up to the hype the past few years.
Because that's always the story at the U.S. Open, right? Because, you know, the R&A for the Open Championship are like, hey, you shoot 2 under and win, you shoot 22 under, we don't care.
Right, yeah,
We play it as it lies, but the course is always the story at a USGA event.
And I have a feeling people are going to flip out if this is, if we even see double digits under par, they're going to lose their minds.
Yeah, like Xander Schauffele is like, people don't want to see him struggle. BS. BS, because that makes him mortal and normal to us that are regular hackers.
That's right. All right, when we come back, we run through all the bets that we've got in the account so far for the U.S. Open.
This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Welcome back. It's Long Shots. It's the U.S. Open. Let's get to the good stuff. All the bets that Wes and I have in our accounts and what we're hoping cashes this week. Wes, I can see yours already. I'm going to let you talk through them. But, man, me and you got very close to going down a similar path, but I kind of ended up going a different way. So talk me through what you got so far, my friend.
Yeah, there's a lot of different routes you can go with this thing. At the top, I started, and I have a little better number in pocket, but that's the one that's widely available. I made it actually a few weeks ago, and that's Bryson DeChambeau, who's trying to repeat at the U.S. Open. I didn't get the better of the battle last year because I was on Rory McIlroy at Pinehurst, and Bryson DeChambeau, Rory kind of spilled some milk, and then Bryson hit that incredible bunker shot on 18 to save par and win. You know, he's right. This isn't like Wingfoot necessarily where you can just bomb and gouge. But if anybody can bomb and gouge, it's Bryson DeChambeau. And, you know, one of the things that's underrated about Bryson is his short game is good.
Yep.
He is a good putter, and he is good around the green. I think scrambling percentage, I think I had him second behind the tournament favorite, Scottie Scheffler. So I trust Bryson, and he'll be creative too. He's a guy that I say weird in a good way. He's weird, and he likes this challenge.
Oh, yeah.
He likes, how do I figure this thing out? I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to try to figure it out. That's kind of his, like, scientific mind. He was a physics major, after all, at SMU. But, yeah, I think Bryson is going to relish this challenge.
Yeah, I really like Bryson this week as well. Again, we said it earlier. I really came in thinking I was going to be betting him for sure. I can't argue with where the odds are at. It's the only problem. So, yeah, Bryson, it is – I'll kind of spoil it real quick. Just top of the board, I'm going to be a little light with my outrights. It is Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm. I am hoping and praying I'm going to get a live betting opportunity on one of them, Wes, because I am very high on all three, and I think all three of their odds are about spot on. But let's finish going through your outlines.
Yeah, you mentioned John Rahm, who was 1350 down here at Circa, 12-1 pretty much market-wide, and I think that's fair, would like a little better, but I don't think that should keep you off necessarily if you want to bet him. Of course, got in the mix, was tied with Scottie Scheffler, actually, at the PGA, and then he got to the Green Mile, and he went for broke.
Yeah.
And when you go for broke on that difficult stretch, sometimes you end up losing five strokes in three holes, and that's what he did, finished T8. He's been the model of consistency. He's not won yet this year, but never finished outside the top 10, and I know it's not, it's like 54 or whatever players every week, but you're top 10 every single week.
Yep.
So that's still a good feat. By the way, Rahm does have some history here at Oakmont. Low amateur here in 2016, where he's had a 76 on Thursday and then went 69, 72, and 70 to shoot one over for the championship, which, hell, may end up being the winning score this year for all we know. But John Rahm, I think, is one that might be getting slightly ignored outside the big two. Xander Schauffele is a little bit of a speculative play for me, Kelly, because he has not been in great form. He has not been, the peak form because he had the injury. Like last summer, he was sandwiched in between winning his two major championships. So certainly a little bit down from that, but has finished inside the top 10 at the U.S. Open in 7 of 8 career starts, never finished lower than 14th. So I think he's got the temperament to embrace the grind, and he's a patient player. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy that shows a lot of emotion or gets really discouraged or at least doesn't show it outwardly, and I think he's slowly on his way back. He's gained in tee to green each of his last 6 starts. So Xander Schauffele for me. I'm gonna take a shot here, and I don't disagree with our guest Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel's sentiment on him. It's kind of like, I'm from Missouri, you got to show me here, Joaquin Niemann in a major. T8 last month, his best finish ever in a major championship. I think he seems to be getting a little bit more comfortable, and maybe winning begets winning. Even if it's whether it's on Live or whether it's on DP World Tour or Korn Ferry or wherever the hell it is, he's winning. And that gives you confidence. And, his victory last weekend in Virginia at Robert Trent Jones and then at Chapultepec in Mexico City, both on POA greens. So I think, that's something to worry. I think he'll be used to the speed and kind of the contours of the green. So I'm going to give Joaquin Niemann a whirl here at 30-1. Patrick Cantlay, one I considered. I've got some PTSD betting him, though, outright in these major championships. I reserve the right to add. Victor Hovland, 60-1. Yeah, I have PTSD with this guy, too. I just took the number, though, because the weakness I mentioned that I've always mentioned is around the green. He stinks around the green with chipping, especially when those are short grasses and tight lies. This is thick crap all the way over. So I think he's better, like, punching out of that and in terms of his chipping. Third on a similar layout at Oak Hill for the 2023 PGA, Sir Victor Hovland, 60-1. Last time I bet Harris English at 100-1, it worked out for me at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines earlier this year. Former U.S. Open venue, by the way, where John Rahm won a couple years ago. I'm going to go back to Harris English here. T2 at the PGA, 12th at the Masters, three top eights in his last five U.S. Open. So he's got kind of the temperament as a grinder in this type of thing, and I think Harris English can go well. And then Matt Fitzpatrick, 125-1. Speaking of another grinder, we actually hit on him a couple years ago at Brookline at the Country Club, 2022 U.S. Open, where he also won the U.S. Amateur as a 15-year-old. No stranger to winning a major championship on a classic design. T8 at the PGA. He's one of the better putters out there on these really lightning fast greens. So going a little speculative on Matt Fitzpatrick at 125-1. But as you can see with all these names, these guys are all proven players who maybe they haven't all won majors, but they've all won relatively frequently and have been somewhat regular winners in their career. So that's my card thus far. May add more. The placement markets and the matchups will be available Wednesday at vsin.com/picks.
Yep, make sure to go there. Go there for Wes's great write-up on the U.S. Open this week, but then all of our picks will be up at vsin.com as well. And what I love about doing some of our sports-specific podcasts here at the network is you get to talk to other smart betting minds in the same sport. And I'll tell you, Wes, Harris English is a guy that rated out pretty high for me. I didn't really consider all that much, but when you're telling me there's triple digits out there on him, I think I'll probably add a few bucks on Harris English myself. He does have, even just past few finishes, T12, T53, T2, T11, just his last four events as well, and then you brought up the Masters. All right, my outright card looks like this. I'm going back to Ludwig at this price. We've seen him. The big question all year long, Wes, has been the consistency. Is he going to be able to put every part of his game together throughout the season? And it looks like finally the past couple weeks he's doing that. T13 last week at the RBC Canadian Open, T16 at the Memorial. He is gaining tee to green. He's gaining on his ball striking two straight, and with a slight drift to 27, there's even 30-1s out there. I think it's a good time to get back in on Ludwig.
So absolutely got the game to win the US Open, question.
And I think this is a course he could actually play pretty well on. So 27-1 out right, backing it up with a top five then. And then the one guy, man, I can't ignore what he's done. I know he's missed cuts in both his majors this year, but Sepp Straka and where he rated out for me, the approach numbers and the accuracy off the tee, it's too much for me to ignore on a course like this. With what Sepp Straka has done, last 16 rounds, he was my third highest rated golfer. Only behind Scottie Scheffler and Shane Lowry, who was mentioned by Rex Hoggard. But even just past 3 weeks, third at the Memorial. Yes, he missed the cut of the PGA, but then he won the Truist. I think a lot of people forget that this guy has won twice this year already. So it is not a large outright bet for me, but I really like him in the top 20 market. That's where I played him at plus 150. So that's where I really like Straka if you want to avoid the outright. I think he's a good top 20 bet. Keegan Bradley, another guy. Yes, if you watch this show, you watch me on a numbers game, you know I love Keegan Bradley. But, man, the ball striking numbers have just been solid all year, Wes. If he can put it all together, these are tough greens for everybody. If he's going to get up there on the greens and just putt average, put together a nice ball striking week, I think Keegan's live this week. So played him in the outright market, played him in a top 10. Okay,
he's going to have to pick himself for the Ryder Cup.
That's right. If he wins this one, he better. Yeah, that's for sure. My two favorite bets, John Rahm top 10. Played this, got it at plus 125. I think if you're seeing plus money on John Rahm top 10, that's a great bet. Could be, again, I'm going to be looking to add him potentially live in tournament. Don't hate Wes's bet at all. I got angry when I checked Circuit today and they were back down to 12-1 on him. And then the top 20, Xander Schauffele. I love Xander this week too. With the how much strength is at the top of the board, I'm just going to go with a bigger top 20 play on Xander this week instead of the outright. But I got very close to firing on the outright like you did.
I will be playing that top 20 as I always do. Pretty much every single tournament that Xander Schauffele is in, I don't think you can go wrong there.
Yeah, and then the only other one to really talk about, Shane Lowry, and it is. I didn't really expect to be betting Shane this week. Thought I was going to be looking for a little bit more distance. But Rex mentioned it is the accuracy off the tee, and then he is one of the best best runs right now with his iron play and approach numbers. Last 16 rounds, second rated golfer for me, 6th on approach, 11th in par 4 scoring, 9th in driving accuracy, 4th in greens in regulation, kind of getting checking all the boxes that I'm looking for.
He knows how to lead here at Oakmont, too. He was the third round leader where Dustin Johnson eventually won. But Shane Lowry, I think when the scoring is like closer to par, that's where he functions the best. He's not a guy that's going to win when it's 20 on.
Yeah, plays better at the tougher courses and the tougher tournaments. Wes, always a pleasure.
Great to be with
you. Long shots, if you missed this at all on YouTube or podcast form, it will be up there soon. For Wes, I'm Kelly Bidlin. Get all the picks at VSiN.com. We'll see you soon.